Yeah. There we go. Thank you, Mark. And I'd love happy to introduce Sean today, who's come to share his experience, strength, and hope with us for however long you feel like talking, Sean. Just go with it. And I hand the meeting over to you. Thank
Thank
you.
you very much, John. I'm Sean. I'm an alcoholic. That's the worst thing you can ever say to an alcoholic. I can speak as long as you want. Sometimes they do, and they can bore you to tears. Yeah, but anyway, I'm an alcoholic. And thanks very much, John, for asking me. And thanks, Mark, for doing whatever you're doing back there. And thanks, everybody, for being here. Well, say, I'm Sean. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not anything else. I don't have an ism. I'm not an addict. I'm an alcoholic. I got sober in AA many years ago, like, and I, for me, like, it's the common suffering through alcoholism. That's the unifying factor, and it's basically we are a CA is a fellowship of alcoholics in action, like, you know, so that's why I'll tell you a little bit of what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I'm Irish. I kind of a. I left school at 16. I was in London at 17, and I was there. The plan was to leave after 6 months, where I hoped to kind of go to Canada. God knows why I was going to Canada, and I pictured myself having a team of huskies and going around the prairies, like, with a crate of hooch underneath the sleigh thingy. And anyway, 6 months on, like, you know, like, I'd been nowhere really. I'd been to a couple of doss houses. I'd slept in parks. For Americans, doss houses are kind of for down and outs, homeless people. And a lot of that had to do with ignorance and naivety, like, but it all had to do with drinking, because I never wasted any money. As I say, like, I spent it all on drink. And so that was me. So I started drinking when I was in Dublin. I'd moved from where I come from, Enniscorthy in Ireland, a small town in Wexford, and I'd moved to Dublin, and I started drinking in a pub in Dublin called Donoghue's, a Merry and Row. And this was a place where it was a folk pub. Folkies used to go there. The Dubliners used to be in there the whole time. They were folk drinkers more than folk singers at the time, like, and they and really, that was kind of, I loved that. There was me as a kind of a 16, 17-year-old up at the bar with all the men, bearded men, like, you know, with various instruments. Sometimes they only had two strings on them, but it didn't make any difference, like, you know. I felt very good. That's where I felt at home amongst these men. So anyway, I left there and I came to London after a year there. When I came into a looking back at my experience, like, I realized I'd never had a social drink in my life. Right from day one, I was off. Like, I was having my landlady in Dublin, like, was locking me out of the house and telling me, like, not to be coming in drunk. And so there was I, like, you know, I was bringing the whole house into disrepute, really, like. And the but anyway, so then I'm in London, and I went there. I'm a barman when I arrived there, that was very nice, because you could drink as much as you wanted, like, and I say you could drink as much as you wanted. I drank, like, and the and the now, right from the beginning, I knew, like, as soon as I had the first drink, I was off, like, you know, that was it. And I, unfortunately, or fortunately, as it turns out, like, I had the first drink every day, and that's what I knew. I drank for 11 years. And I never had a social drink in my life. Like, you know, every single one of them was alcohol. So basically, I went from being a young Irish lad who didn't really have any ambitions, like, and being brought up in the Catholic Church. We were told what to aspire to, like, you know, but nobody gave us the route, the map to get there, the plan to get there, like, you know, like, and the so I ended up really kind of as I say, like, with 2 feet firmly buried in midair. As they used to say of Plato, as they still say of Plato, like, I really wasn't grounded. Basically, I often put it down to that, like, you know, like, the church and Christian Brothers, nobody ever asks you, what do you think, Sean? What do you think? Like, you know, like, the first time I ever had an opportunity to kind of look at what I think, or what was what I did a step four and five in AA. And to get myself grounded, like, in what I was, like, you know, but I really was sort of all over the place, like, you know. And so anyway, 11 years of this drinking went on, going from bad to worst, getting arrested for being drunk, getting arrested for being drunk, losing jobs. I had hundreds of jobs, like getting sacked for being drunk, being homeless, and the it was the whole lot was, as I say, like in AA, like I say, like it's a progressive illness, alcoholism. And I looked at my drinking and noticed it was progressive. It got progressively worse. Now, the thing that got worse wasn't the amount I was drinking, because at the end of my drinking, I was getting drunk very easy. And I kind of I seldom ate, like, you know, food wasn't a thing that I kind of indulged with very often. So yeah, the effect of drink on me was far greater. Like, I could be blacking out after four or five or six drinks, like, at the end, like, you know, whereas I have and did go for days drinking, like back in my early days, like, and I had blackouts certainly, like, but I was able to do it, like, you know, especially like when you go on a cultural trip to Amsterdam or something like that, over to see whatever you saw, you come back and you wouldn't have a clue where you've been. So that was me. So I ended up anyway, like at the end of this sort of the drinking year, so to speak, as an unemployable dishwasher. And the not something I aspired to be. I didn't set out to be that, like, you know, like, so I known about AA for many years. The person I'd drunk with had joined AA, and he was a lovely man. And Nicky Fleming, he was from Cork, and I used to see him around from time to time. And he never tried, he knew I was an alcoholic, but he never tried to 12-step me or never tried to get me to go to AA. But he always had a chat with me and told me how he was getting on. So I always associated Alcoholics Anonymous with this person, Nicky. And Nicky was a guy like he would have been the sort of guy I drank with. So anyway, when I came into AA, then, like, I decided I was going to go to AA after another humiliating experience of pissing myself or shitting myself or being impotent or some fucking thing like that. You know, there was a whole, it wasn't the worst ever, like, it was just the bottom. It was a rock bottom. Like, I decided I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I looked up to see where Alcoholics Anonymous was, and I was in London, and I discovered, like, the office was around the corner from where I lived. Like, I was living in a bedsitter, like, which was a total pit, like, and I was just hanging on to there. I remember looking up to see how much it was. If I went into a doss house, would it be any cheaper? And doss houses were far more expensive than bedsitters. Anyway, I kind of decided I went to Redcliffe Gardens, as it was then, and I kind of handed myself in. So that the morning of my last drink, I went in to I met some of my fellow drinkers, and we kind of had drink, so the pubs used to close then at 3 o'clock. So we left there then, and I'd made my mind up. I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous, so I walked down the road, and we bought some cider and went into the ABC coffee bar. Used to be a tea bar, used to be across from Merrill Sports Station. And we went there and we drank cider from our teacups, put it in the teapot or something, and I sneaked away from this lot. Now, I thought, if these people, who were all in much the same boat as myself, after all, who does drink a who drinks a cider, like, in teacups in the afternoon, only fucking alkies, like. But I thought, if these people knew I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous, they'd be having a right laugh, like, you know, like, he's bad enough, but now he's going to Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, that was it. So I headed off down to IA, so that was it, really. Like, and I was down there. I was asked if I really wanted to stop drinking, and I said, "Yes, indeed, I do." And I stood in. I stank quite a bit. I had hydrophobia. I was afraid of getting into the bath in case I had a convulsion in there. I hadn't washed for quite a long time. I stood in the only clothes I possessed, like, and the and the yeah. So that night, anyway, I went to an AA meeting, and that's the last drink I had, I'm pleased to say. And I worked out, I didn't work it out, the computer did it for me. I went to this meeting, and it was all these people there. It was in Talgart Road in West London. And People were there sharing. There was a friend of mine there, like, which embarrassed me a bit, but I thought he's here. Yeah, I didn't realize he was in AA. And he said, "Sean, we've been holding this seat for you." And I thought that was a nice welcome. So I had a cup of tea, and the meeting went on. And I identified with everybody. Everybody spoke a bit of me, like, and I felt at home. But the wonderful thing about it is, none of them were drinking. Whatever they'd come from much the same position as myself. And there they all were, not drinking. So I got a solution to my drinking problem there that night. It was, don't drink a day at a time and get to meetings. And now they say in AA, some people say in AA, which is bollocks, what kept you sober yesterday won't keep you so won't necessarily keep you sober today. Well, I'm pleased to say that I've that's 18,113 days ago. You can work that out for yourself. That, and I haven't had a drink in those all those days. And they so going to a like I remember the suggestion of getting to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I thought that's a rough sentence. Fuck me, this is penance. And then it didn't take me long to work out, well, what am I going to do if I don't actually go to meetings? Like, I don't have any, I'm unemployed, unemployable, nowhere to go. Like, the only people I know are piss artists, like, and so I thought, well, I'll give that a go. Like, because as I say, I was in London. There was 100 meetings a week in London then. And I thought, I'm bound to find some place that suits me. I wasn't very good, like, at taking orders. Like, you know, my usual thing, like, was stick your job up your arse, like, you know, like, various things like that, and ending up homeless. And I can, that happened in a number of times where I was living in the job in the bar. A bar, you end up homeless as well as a jobless. And so anyway, I found the first meeting was fine, and I found nearly all the meetings were fine for me. I loved them. I loved the meetings. I met friends there. I kind of a we used to go for coffee. That was an essential part. It was a big part of the thing, like, you know, meeting people outside, coffee before and after meetings, meeting fellow for feral people like myself. And the wonderful thing about it is that the more worse you were, the more you were accepted. And back then, I was like, there was none of this shite, like, if I could get a sponsor and get on your knees and all that nonsense. Like, people welcomed you, like, and the older members were especially welcoming, like, you know, like, and they thought if you weren't drinking today, you were absolutely doing brilliant, like, and so I liked that. So what have I done then to keep sober since then? Well, as I say, I haven't drunk a day at a time, and I think that's the same for life in general, like, you know, like, being able to make a contribution is the biggest thing, like, it's the greatest underminer mining of poverty of all sorts. At my first meeting, I heard mention of God and all this shit, like, and I thought, oh no. I thought, like, I'd kind of jumped through the big hoop that was required to get sober, and by coming to AA, like, and I thought, well, I don't know what this is, like, you know. I'd say I was born a Catholic, but it never meant anything to us, like, say, like, nobody ever told us what the Virgin Mary was or the Assumption into Heaven of this woman, or that we didn't have a clue what these things meant, and all this the things, no, nothing was ever explained to us. But anyway, I thought I'm not going to be able to do this. But thankfully, there was no great urgency on all of this business. If you didn't drink and you were getting meetings and being involved, that was an essential part of it. That was it. So I did this, and as I say, what kept me sober on day one has been keeping me sober for those 11 and whatever thousand days since then. And I've been able to, because I'm not drinking a day at a time. I'm a you know, I'm not waking up in a blackout every morning. I'm not waking up getting sacked for fucking being drunk on the job. I'm not all of the things, sobriety, like. Some people say, like, so, just not drinking, because just not drinking is not enough. Well, fucking just not drinking is quite fine for me, because when I'm just not drinking alcohol today, it opens up an infinity of possibilities for me, like, and has done, like, for the days I've been in AA, like, so just not drinking is wonderful. I got involved in all sorts of service in AA, again, essential for me. What else did I do? I kind of It was important for me. Like I kind of, as I say, like this is my big anniversary in years coming up now in a couple of months' time. Like it's 50 years if say if you're working it out, and I've never had a sponsor because I couldn't understand this whole thing of sponsors. Like I come to see them as being groomers and fucking tyrants, like who lay down other people the road for other people. I started. I was probably 6 or 8 months in there when I had a look at the big book, and I don't identify with many stories in the big book. I identify with some of the stuff in there. Like obviously, I do like, you know, but for me, like the definition of alcoholism is like one drink is too many and a thousand are not enough. And if I don't have one, I'm quite happy. I'm not going to move on and sort of get pissed or go on the tear. Well, this bit is important, like that. See, it's an inside job, really. This AA business, an inside job that I had to change. Like, and when I came in for, surely I mimicked other people. Like, you do what other people say. Like, I did this thing, like 90 meetings in 90 days. It saved my life, probably. And I did other things, like, but there was areas along the way, like where I didn't identify with other people and I didn't agree with them. And there's areas of the big book when I started reading it, like I didn't identify with it and I didn't agree with it. And some of the big book, I think it's factually it's a intellectually incorrect, psychologically wrong, like you know, and they. So anyway, I found my own route, and it was important not to mimic other people. Like, it was build all these people. The stories in the big book were all American WASPs, and I was a down and out fucking Paddy, an unemployable dishwasher. Like, so my experience of life is obviously going to be much different to theirs, and I had to work out what my experience, what I had to find, I had to get myself grounded. And the one way of not getting grounded is to conform and comply with what other people are telling you you should be. So I kind of I mimicked other people, but eventually I found my own sort of a route, as it were, and I found my own foundation. So instead of having 2 feet firmly buried in midair, when I did step four and five, especially, that was very powerful for me because after that, then I could be myself with a degree of gusto, like you know. See, one of the major issues along this on this was that I remember I worked in the building trade after when I got myself together, like in London, and I was a trade union rep. I was a shop steward for a big site, a big building site, and the people in AA were telling me, some of them were like they're telling me I should be mine. This was none of my business. I should be doing spiritual things, like you know, like at that time I really didn't trust my own judgment, like. But I remember a friend of mine like saying this to him, and he said, if that's what you want to do, like you know, go and do it. He said, considering you've never done any fucking thing any useful in your life before, like you know, if that's your thing, go and do it. So thereafter, I learned to trust my own judgment, like you know, like, and it was okay for other people to go to church and do all these other daft things, like, but that didn't interest me, like, and I got involved in politics and still am to a great degree, like, and things like that, and yeah, so it's the being grounded with this step four and five. That was a major thing. So I've always kept my involvement in AA, my involvement with the many people who came around about the same time. I love them dearly. I'm going to have a party like in London, like in the for my anniversary, like in the and and I'm inviting all my old friends there. There's a number of them still sober, like, and you wouldn't have fucking, you know, you wouldn't have bet on these people having any life, you know. I thought I'd be dead at 30. I was 20 years when I came into AA, like, and many of my friends in AA who did the same, like, and they've all had very useful, productive lives in every sense of the word, like useful people contributing to society and all of that. So another thing that was important for me, like, when I was in AA for a while, like, I really didn't, I don't think I've ever used the word higher power in my life, like in AA. And but it was a man I met when I was around a year around, like, and he described himself as an atheist. Dartmoor Bill was his name, like, he was a lovely man, like, and he was the first man I ever kind of heard describe himself as an atheist in AA. And So anyway, he became a great friend of mine, like, and I spoke at his funeral there a number of years ago, and we had a great time at his 50th birthday. That was a great turnout. But Bill Dartmoor, Bill was wonderful, and so I realized that when I met Bill first, I was probably about 20 years. I was about a year sober, and Bill was 20-odd years sober, and I thought, well, you can stay sober without believing in God. Now, I can honestly say it's not the big book that got me sober, kept me sober. It's not the higher power, like it's the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's coming, it's me being engaged with. I kind of get my, as I say, I don't identify with the stories in the big book. I identified with the kind of the folklore edition of Alcoholics Anonymous, what I hear in AA meetings, the plain people of Ireland, like, you know, and wherever else, like they come from, like, and I identified with them, as I say, like they were all much like myself. A lot of them were like myself, and I got my identification over there. And it's a kind of, it's not, AA is not group therapy, like AA is a community of alcoholics in action. The service, like, is without people doing service, I'm ever so grateful for all the people who were there before me that turned up, they made the tea, they carried a message, like, and I don't know. I know people get sober. You get an awful lot of etherealism now in AA, like, especially since COVID. Fucking people hop in for 3 minutes and they're off again, like, and then they're fucking back again, like, and I'm pleased most of you have stayed for the duration of this. Well done, everybody. And it's this commitment, really. That's, I'm great. I've had friends in here who've given up coming to AA, like, and I've met them outside, like, and all they do is moan and groan and criticize every fucking aspect of AA, like, and well, I've got to say to them, like, well, fuck you, like, you know, like, if everybody was like you, I wouldn't be sober, like, you know, I wouldn't be able to fucking hear argue with you, like. I find it interesting, like, people turn on AA when AA's got them sober, like, and often they end up running treatment centers and things like that. So that's me. I've retained my critical faculties, hopefully, like, I've got all sorts of wonderful things have happened to me. Since I got sober, my life opened up. Like, you know, I've traveled the world. Like, I've got a son and a grandson who was here last week, fucking tearing the house apart. I live in a house now, like, you know, like in the floorboards. I haven't been arrested. Oh, yes, I have been arrested twice since I've been sober, like, but that was for something to do with politics. And I didn't get locked up for anything, like, so. He saved my life, my sanity. He's given me everything, and as I say, I keep on coming back, like, to be part of the solution. Because any people who turn up at AA meetings, they contribute to AA, like, as well as there's all sorts of other levels of service. People talk about other levels of service of politics. Well, for instance, if it wasn't for people running intergroups and various things like that, there wouldn't be a telephone service. And and that's how most people come to AA, like, so all of these services, all these service positions are essential. I think I've done them all near enough, except a board member. But there we are. That's me. Sorry, if I was to go for a conference delegate now in London, there wouldn't be a hope in hell of me. I would be rejected totally outright. Like, but back when I did become a conference delegate, I was probably about 8 or 9 years sober. It was fine then, like, but these days you got all this fucking middle management, like, you know, and the people who tell you've got to ring five people a day, and the other people want to know who your sponsor is. If you haven't got a sponsor, you're not capable of fucking doing service, like, you know. So there we are. So AA was wonderful and anarchic when I came in, which is what really endeared me to it, like, you know, so that's me. I'm going to shut up now, like, and I think I've done well on time. So thank you very much, Jan. Thanks for having me along. Thanks all for listening.